from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. A California law requiring faith-based anti-abortion centers to post information about state-funded abortion services met skepticism yesterday from U.S. Supreme Court justices across the ideological spectrum. At 9, we'll talk about the case and what's at stake. Then at 9:30, lawmakers are demanding Facebook explain how data from 50 million Facebook users was accessed to target election messaging to U.S. voters. We'll get the latest on the scandal and what it means for Facebook users. That's next, after this. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The United States Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday in a challenge to a California law requiring anti-abortion crisis pregnancy centers to post signs or notify patients in writing if the center is not a licensed medical facility. If they are licensed by the state but do not offer a full range of reproductive health services, they're required to notify patients of free pregnancy-related services provided by the state, including birth control and abortion. Supporters of the law, known as the FACT Act, say they want to ensure that these faith-based centers do not mislead women, but anti-abortion activists say the law violates their First Amendment rights. We're going to talk about this with a couple of guests who are joining us. Greg Storr is Supreme Court reporter with the Bloomberg News Agency. He's also the author of a book called A Black and White Case, How Affirmative Action Survived Its Greatest Legal Challenge. And welcome, Greg Storr. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. Good to be on.
We also have Radhika Rao with us. And Radhika Rao is professor of law, University of California Hastings College of the Law. And we welcome you to the program as well. Good morning.
Wonderful to be on with you, Michael.
Glad to have you on. Let me begin with you, Professor Rao. We're talking about kind of truth in advertising here, aren't we? Requiring anti-abortion clinics to more fully disclose who they are?
Yes, that's definitely what California is arguing. California is arguing that essentially these crisis pregnancy centers are misleading. They are presenting themselves, many of them, as medical, as offering medical services with people in white coats, displaying portraits in front of ultrasound machines, and saying that they're subject to HIPAA privacy regulations, which only apply to medical providers, and yet they are not offering, there are no licensed medical providers on site, and they're not offering, they're not a licensed medical provider.
So the anti-abortion clinics, the crisis pregnancy clinics, are objecting to this law on the basis of free speech grounds, yes?
Yes.
And
they also objected on freedom of religion, but the case before the Supreme Court is only addressing the freedom of speech questions.
And if I can go to you, Greg Storr, this goes back to the FACT Act. Maybe we ought to refresh what that actually specifies.
Well, so this is a law that was passed in 2015, took effect in 2016, and it has basically two sets of requirements. And one, it has to do with licensed clinics, those that are licensed to practice medicine. Those have to disclose to patients that there are services that are available to them, you know, with the government subsidizing them, a variety of things like prenatal services, contraceptives, and abortion. And then the second type of requirement is for unlicensed clinics, those that aren't licensed to perform medical practices. And among other things, that those clinics are, those centers are required, if they advertise, they have to say very clearly in a big font and in as many as 13 different languages that they don't offer medical services. So both of those are being challenged under the First Amendment.
You mentioned the 13 different languages. That was one of the things that seemed to turn around the man who is often, or the justice who is often the swing vote, Anthony Kennedy.
Yeah, that was an issue he raised. It's also an issue that even one of the most liberal justices, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, it seemed to bother her as well, that if a clinic that qualifies as under this law just puts out some sort of advertisement that says choose life or pro-life, that they may have to, in that circumstance, in as many as in L.A. County, 13 different languages, in the same font size as the words choose life, also say that they are not licensed to practice medicine. So that was probably the single issue that drew the most pushback from the justices yesterday.
I think, let me go back to you, Radhika Rao, excuse me. The thing that seemed to at least support the FACT Act was coming from Justice Breyer. He used the precedent of a Pennsylvania case. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So Justice Breyer's argument essentially was that what's good for the goose is good for the gander, is how he put it. And so he says in 1992, in a case called Planned Parenthood against Casey, the Supreme Court upheld a Pennsylvania law which required clinics that provided abortion services to convey a wide variety of information to women seeking abortion, information that had nothing to do with abortion. The information was about the possibility of getting child support payments from the father of the fetus, or the possibility of adoption. So basically alternatives to abortion these clinics were required to provide under the informed consent provision. And the Supreme Court in 1992, in this case called Planned Parenthood v. Casey, upheld those requirements, saying that a law that requires clinics providing abortions to convey truthful information, even if it's with respect to alternatives, is constitutional.
And in fact, if indeed Justice Breyer uses that kind of language, good for the goose, good for the gander, it's sort of distinguishing between states like Pennsylvania, which are interpreted as, for the most part, pro-life, as opposed to California, which is a pro-choice state.
Exactly. So what Justice Breyer argued was if a pro-life state can require abortion clinics to provide information on alternatives, such as adoption, why can't a pro-choice state like California require crisis pregnancy centers, which are opposed to abortion and are really counseling people to carry the pregnancy to term and either give the child up for adoption or engage in parenthood, why can't they be required to provide information about alternatives such as abortion?
Radhika Rao, again, is professor of law, University of California, Hastings College of the Law. And let me go back to you, Greg Storr. Greg Storr is Supreme Court reporter with Bloomberg News. This would seem to be, from all the skepticism, including the more, shall we call, liberal or progressive judges, comes down to a likelihood that they'll strike down the California disclosure law that requires pregnancy centers, including those faith-based ones, to notify women that the state offers subsidies for abortion. But let's talk just for a moment about the history of this, because this law, this FACT law, came into being over concerns. This was about 3 years ago, that these crisis pregnancy centers, there are about 200 of them, sometimes use deceptive advertising and consulting practices that essentially confuse possible patients.
Yeah, and abortion rights advocates were among the big supporters of this law for that reason. And as they talk about the case publicly, that's what they focus on, is this idea that that women in a vulnerable situation are being deceived. It was interesting that, to me at least, that not that much of that came out in the argument, in the sense that the state was not trying to defend this as a problem that we saw in these pro-life anti-abortion centers that we needed to deal with. The state was trying to defend this as a more neutral regulation that was not targeted at the centers, but targeted at protecting women more generally. And one of the sets of questions that they got, that the lawyer for California got a lot of, was, well, why doesn't it apply to more clinics? The law is written in a way so that, as a practical matter, it seems to apply almost entirely to this relatively small number of pro-life clinics, and the justices wanted to know why that was.
We're talking about the Supreme Court hearing just yesterday, challenges to California disclosure law for anti-abortion centers. And I know many of you who are listening may want to weigh in, and this is an opportunity for you to do so with not only questions but comments. And you can call us now and let us know what's on your mind in relation to this ongoing controversy. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your call. So Please feel free to join the program now, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. It's 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org. You can also join the program by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Many ways to become a part of the program and join the conversation. And we should mention that there are about three times as many, now, pro-life clinics as there are pregnancy clinics that essentially, in fact, part of the problem that we're dealing with here, I talked about false advertising before, is there was, for example, a pro-life clinic in Texas that called itself Planning Parenthood. So they're even taking names that suggest that they're doing the sort of things. I'm not trying to be partisan here one way or the other, but it does get into some confusing territory. And I'm wondering if perhaps there are questions about, and let me go to you on this, Professor Rao, about how the law is applied. I mean, we need a greater deal of evidentiary record here, don't we?
Yes. Justice Breyer was definitely concerned about the fact that we don't have much of an evidentiary record. And the reason for that is because the case below, it never went to trial. The parties, these crisis pregnancy centers, asked for a preliminary injunction. They wanted the law to be halted as it was applied to them, and they were denied that. So the case, as it is before us, doesn't really have a lot of evidence. So Justice Breyer, I think, was kind of continually bringing up this issue in oral argument and suggesting that the lack of an evidentiary record, that perhaps in light of that, the court should punt and send it back to the lower courts. But on the issue of why it was that the state was presenting this as a more generally applicable law and not dealing specifically with the problem of the deceptive and misleading tactics employed by some of these crisis pregnancy centers, I think that the reason for California's fear of going that way was Justice Kagan really was expressing concerns, as was Justice Alito, about the fact that the law applied or seemed to apply not broadly and generally to all kinds of clinics, but that perhaps it looked like it was targeted at certain kinds of speakers. And she even, Justice Kagan, used the word gerrymandered. So the problem here was that the state was trying to avoid the implication that they were being discriminatory and selecting or creating a law that applies to target a particular group.
And didn't the state lawyers argue informed consent and also that warnings and disclosures are routine, for example, in hospitals or with prescription drugs and doctors?
Yes. They did make exactly that argument. So really, I think this comes down to how do you view these clinics? The clinics are arguing that they shouldn't be viewed, the ones that are not licensed medical providers, that essentially they're not providing medical services. They're engaging in a kind of political speech. And so disclosure requirements as applied to political speakers should be deemed unconstitutional. We can't require a newspaper that publishes an editorial in favor of one client, in favor of one speaker or in favor of one particular candidate, to provide equal and opposite time to the other side. That kind of a law has been held unconstitutional. But the state is suggesting that this isn't a law that's regulating political speakers. This is a law that's regulating centers that are purporting to provide medical advice. And to the extent that they're providing medical advice and engaging in medical procedures, they should be subject to professional regulations that apply to a wide variety of other kinds of professions.
But the pro-life law, and let me go to Greg Storr on this, the pro-life lawyers are essentially saying that they're trying to lure women to have abortions and not give them the kind of counseling that would lead them into going for adoption, for example. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why they defend the informed consent laws in the pro-life states. They were trying to make the argument, which didn't seem to me like it got a whole lot of traction yesterday, but the argument that informed consent laws need to be tied to a medical procedure. So it is
okay if what the state is doing is saying, because you're about to perform this procedure, doctor, you need to tell the patient about the possible side effects and the implications and the alternatives, but only if that's, we're talking about a medical procedure. And the argument they made that...
Yeah, excuse me, Greg, I was going to get to the, this gets down to who has a medical license and who doesn't, really, doesn't it?
Well, even when they don't have medical licenses, the law itself, if you read it carefully, specifies that in order to be subject to the law, a facility, even one that is not licensed to provide medical services, must purport to offer obstetric ultrasounds, obstetric sonograms or prenatal care, or pregnancy testing, or offers to provide prenatal sonography and pregnancy counseling or collect health information. It's got to satisfy at least two of those criteria. So these are unlicensed medical, unlicensed centers. Let me correct myself and not call them medical centers because they're not licensed medical providers, but they're offering what I would characterize as medical services.
Again, we're talking with Radhika Rao. She's professor of law at Hastings College of the Law, University of California, Hastings College of the Law, and Greg Storr, who's Supreme Court reporter with Bloomberg News. And let's hear from you, our listeners, and we begin, Randy, with you. You're on the air, Randy. Welcome.
Hello.
Yeah, Randy, are you there?
Yes.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, so my opinion on this, I mean, I am I'm a Christian. I am... I'm also more pro-choice just because, statistically speaking, less people actually do abortions in areas where pro-choice is mandated, or, you know, where that is being educated, or where there's that option. But what I was going to say was that... Oh, man, hold on. Let me get my thoughts together here.
All right. While you're doing that, we'll put you on hold, and we'll get to another caller. Let me go next to Margaret, who's joining us from Michigan. Margaret, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Like I said to the woman that took my original call, I'm a 71-year-old woman who's been fighting this battle forever. I'm just tired of it. Women can make their own decisions. We don't need men. We don't need a lot of people to protect us. In these final decisions, yeah, I think the place should be medically good, and I mean all of that. The safety of the woman is not what's primary here. And these are not pro-life laws. These are pro-birth laws. These are the same people who will cut welfare, who will not provide health care for everybody. Let's just keep having babies and letting them die other ways.
Margaret, I appreciate hearing from you. Thank you for calling in. And that's Margaret from Michigan. Let's get Elijah from Berkeley on next. Elijah, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having my call. So I was just kind of wondering whether their legitimacy, these quote-unquote fake clinics, whether their legitimacy has ever been kind of called to court, and whether they've actually been either sued or, you know, otherwise, you know, taken to court over them not having medical licenses and promoting you know, medical examinations. And that's my question.
Yeah, Greg Storr, can you give us a history here?
Well, I'm not aware of any particular cases, and that's part of, when the professor was talking about Justice Breyer, that's part of the issue that the court was grappling with yesterday, is we don't have a whole lot of facts about this law and how it's worked to know whether any particular clinics have been held to account for violations of it, for example. So it surely is within the power of California authorities, either under this law or some other law, to go after any sort of business or nonprofit that is engaged in deception of consumers or patients. But I don't have a whole lot of information about how often that has happened or might happen in the context of these pregnancy centers.
Well,
yes, and Elijah, that's a really great question. Yeah. Actually, Justice Ginsburg at oral argument asked a very similar question of the state. She said, don't you have fraud laws in California or false business practices? And couldn't you bring those laws to bear against fake clinics that purport to provide medical services when they don't? And the state's response was, yes, we do have those laws, but prosecuting under those laws would be even more intrusive and invasive than a simple requirement that facilities that purport to provide medical services disclose that they are not licensed medical providers.
Well, Professor Rao, I have to ask, are we talking about the possibility of all or most of these disclosure provisions being struck down here?
Well, it's very hard, of course, to make predictions, but I think I would hazard a guess that the licensed medical provider requirement, the requirement that those facilities that do not provide, that are not licensed and don't have licensed medical providers, that they disclose that, that that provision would be upheld. But the other provision, the provision that requires facilities that are licensed medical providers to disclose the availability of alternatives to alternatives such as abortion and contraception, that those requirements might very well be struck down. And that, in fact, is the position that the Trump administration took before the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a kind of compromise position. Let me read some comments that are coming in. Bill says, it looks to me that the court first decides the outcome it wants, then cherry picks prior cases to support that conclusion. Emma tweets, staying pregnant can be risky. And Diana says, no one should have to advocate murder. Let me bring some more callers on here. We'll go next to you, Jess, from Missouri. You're on. Good morning.
Yeah. Hi. I wanted to ring in on my own experience with a pregnancy crisis center when I was 16 years old. I was worried that I might possibly be pregnant. I had heard about this place because they advertise free pregnancy tests, and when you're a teenager and you're scared, that's the last thing you heard. I need that free pregnancy test. It was a really scary experience, not just because of the potential for my life to change, but it was a strange kind of place. I had to drive to St. Louis to get there just to get the pregnancy test. I had to wait in a room by myself. They had the results of the pregnancy test and refused to tell me until I watched their videos and listened to everything they had to say. They made me sit in a room all by myself and wouldn't let me leave. It was a really scary experience. And even after my pregnancy test came back negative, they wanted to continue to indoctrinate and tell me all these things. And then when I asked for follow-up information, okay, so where do I go to stay healthy and to stay safe? What are my next steps to not be in this situation in the future? They wouldn't even point me in a direction. So it was violating, intimidating, and then at the end they just abandoned me when I needed some true help.
I'm sorry you went through that experience, but I appreciate your sharing it with us, and I thank you for that. That's just from Missouri. And here's a listener who writes, the state has no authority to regulate religious speech, which is not otherwise criminal, but it has plenty of authority to regulate the practice of medicine, which these centers claim implicitly to be performing. What about that, Greg Storr? Thoughts from you?
Well, it is certainly the case that the government has more authority to regulate a medical center. There's no question about that. But it's not unlimited authority, and the free speech clause does still play in. And so just to like throw out another example that kind of gets on the same principle, Florida had a law that sought to bar doctors from talking about gun safety with their patients, and a federal appeals court struck that law down. So similar argument there that even though you're regulating the practice of medicine, the government doesn't have unlimited authority to tell doctors what they can say.
One more tweet I'll read. This is a listener. It says, regarding pregnancy alternative centers, how is this any different than if I started a cancer center that offered sound therapy and did not mention chemo or radiation or other scientifically proven options? So a lot of weighing in from listeners, and I appreciate all of you who did weigh in by calling, tweeting, or letting us know your thoughts. And thanks to Greg Storr, Supreme Court reporter at Bloomberg News. Good to have you with us, Greg. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Radhika Rao, Professor of Law, University of California, Hastings College of Law. Thank you for being with us, Professor Rao.
Thank you. Pleasure, Michael.
And another segment of Forum is up ahead. We're going to talk about the Cambridge Analytics scandal and what it means for Facebook users. We'll hear from you on that. We'll also hear from Antonio Garcia Martinez, who will be joining us. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.